experts are here to help us preserve the summer's garden bounty. Way back when, it used to be commonplace for families to can, pickle, and preserve their fruits and vegetables every summer. But the necessity of canning faded away with the advent of the supermarket. Well, now, alongside the popularity of vegetable gardening and the local food movement, canning is making a comeback. One organization even refers to it as a canvolution. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll learn about canning and pickling from three master food preservers. They'll share tips and recipes and answer your questions about how to preserve delicious food without making your family sick. We'll find out about low-sugar canning options and new methods that are just a bit easier than your great-grandmother's. Maine Calling gets the water boiling and heads into the kitchen with blueberries, cucumbers, asparagus, and more. But first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maybe you go for the tomato pickles, or could it be the dilly beans that strike your fancy? For an increasing number of people, half the fun of having a garden is the chance to pickle, preserve, and save some of their hard-earned bounty. Today on the program, we will hear from the experts on how to best preserve your fruits and vegetables so that during the long, cold winter months sure to come, you can have a taste of summer goodness. In the studio with me, Kate McCarty. She is Food Preservation Community Education Assistant with the UMaine Cooperative Extension in Cumberland County. Allison Carol Duffy is a master food preserver and author of Preserving with Pomona's Pectin. And her website is www.canningcraft.com. And Laura McCandlish is a Brunswick-based food writer and radio producer. She's trained as a master food preserver and writes the weekly farm-to-table family column for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you a canner? If so, what's your favorite fruit or vegetable to preserve? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mpbn.net. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to all three of you. I have a feeling this is going to be a very popular show. I'm going to start by reading you a couple things I came across this morning in doing research for this show. A New York Times column or article on canning. The headline is "Not So Scary: Easy Steps to Canning." I thought the word "scary" there was interesting. And then, from a columnist for the Erie Times in Pennsylvania, she writes, "Yes, it's hot and messy, and I'm on my feet for hours. I'm exhausted and in a smidgen of pain when I'm done, but it's satisfying like nothing else. When I'm finally sitting down under the ceiling fan, listening to the lids ping as they seal, I sip on a beverage, and I know I have a month's worth of something yummy ready to go. It's like stirring up gold." So what is your all reaction to the – are you nodding? Is this true? It's hot and sticky and messy and painful, yet worth it?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. there's something intangible about the appeal of canning in addition to all the practical benefits of it. It is really, really satisfying to take local produce or perhaps produce that you've even grown yourself and preserve it for the winter.
Okay. So why are people scared? Is it because people are afraid that they could make their family sick? Yeah,
there are some food safety concerns with canning in particular as far as food preservation. And that's just due to the different types of acidity in foods that we use. So, of course, when you're taking food and putting it in jars and then leaving it at room temperature, there is a concern of some foodborne illness. But as long as you're using tested recipes from trusted resources, which, of course, we can provide, then you should be all set as long as your jars seal.
Okay. Laura, what about you? Do you say it's scary or not?
That's why I think pickling is a great place to start, as well as jams, because you want high acid foods, fruits, and you use sugar, which controls the bacteria, and vinegar with the pickles, so that keeps the bad stuff at bay. I don't even worry about pressure canning green beans because those are readily available at the store. So
okay. And what about taste? You said pressure canning green beans. Is a home canned green bean better tasting than a grocery store canned green bean?
I'm not a huge fan of canned green beans in the first place. So pressure canning subjects the green beans to a really high heat for a period of time, and that's in order to kill any botulism that might be living inside that jar. But when you're done all that pain and suffering standing at this hot stove, you are left with canned green beans. So when it comes to just plain green beans, I would prefer to freeze them, which is a very accessible method and results in a better quality product, or to pickle them and to make dilly beans.
Okay.
Yeah, I would agree that I find that it depends a lot on what it is that you're preserving in terms of method. You know, there are certain things I'd rather have canned and other things I much prefer frozen. Some things are great dried.
Okay, Laura's holding up a
jar of pickled dilly beans that we actually did at the Backyard Locavore Day through the UMaine Extension, where master gardeners and food preservers were on hand in gardens in Brunswick and Freeport. And you can, this has garlic from the garden in it, herbs and spices, even a little turmeric, so you can really customize them to your preference.
I love the fact that all three of you, this is radio so people can't see you, you're all young people. Did you all learn this from your great-grandmothers, or did you come to this in a different way, the love of canning and preserving? Because I suspect there are people of a different generation than you are out there thinking, the last thing I'm going to do is stand in my kitchen all day and get hot and sweaty when I can go to the grocery store. So how I want to hear each of your story. Laura, how did you come to this?
Well, my mother canned tomatoes like right before I was born and then just stopped. It was the 80s, you know, and everybody was interested in what was fast and efficient. But I moved out to Oregon in 2008. You know, it was right when the economic crisis hit and I had left my job at a newspaper and I was just really getting into the local food scene. And suddenly everyone was interested in growing their own and finding a way to actually preserve it in an economical way. And there were food swaps and canning parties and church kitchens were opening themselves up to community canning. And it was just really an exciting time.
Allison, what about you? How did you come to canning?
I definitely did not learn from my mother. She didn't do it at all. My grandmother did, but unfortunately she died before I was old enough to learn from her. So no, I actually learned a small amount from my mother-in-law, but I would say initially I started when I started growing a vegetable garden about 15 years ago, and most of what I originally learned was from books, and I just tried to figure it out as I was going along, and I tried, and I was, you know, successful with a lot of it, but then I learned a lot more, you know, several years later when I took the Master Food Preserver course through the Cooperative Extension. For me, it was the appeal of being able to preserve what I grew.
Okay. And Kate, what about you? How did you come to canning?
I hadn't done any canning either before I started as an AmeriCorps volunteer in my current position at the University of Maine Extension. And I took the Master Food Preserver course as well as on-the-job training. And now I teach hands-on food preservation workshops and manage the Master Food Preserver volunteers. And I just fell in love with it. It is that extension of the local food movement of gardening. It's the next logical step when you find yourself with all this extra produce. And it's funny because I do hear from a lot of people, if we go to a farmer's market with a display about food preservation, older people will come up and say, I have no interest in doing this anymore. So we kind of see this wave. It comes in waves, like one generation grows tired of it, doesn't pass it on to the next. And then they find themselves wanting to do it for different reasons or for the same reasons. And coming to us for workshops and recipes.
It's great that you came to this as an AmeriCorps volunteer, because just yesterday's program on Maine Calling was about AmeriCorps and the 20th anniversary. What a great coincidence. So, and you're leading, Kate, into a question that I was about to ask all of you, because you teach classes, which we'll put a couple of your how-tos on our website, YouTube how-tos on the Maine Calling Facebook page. But all of you have contact with the public, whether as a newspaper writer, a blogger, or teaching classes. The people who come to you, the people you interact with, why are they taking your class? What do they tell you the reasons are?
Well, we actually, when people come through my classes specifically, capture that data with a little end of class workshop. So there's all different reasons. We give them a host of suggestions and they mark off what they may or may not be interested in. So they're looking to increase their consumption of locally grown foods to preserve what they themselves grow. And then the third reason is for personal satisfaction.
Okay, Allison, what about, what are you hearing from people?
Yeah, I find the same thing as what Kate said. In addition, I find a lot of the classes that I teach are focused around jams and jellies. And I would say that a lot of the folks in those classes are also looking for a way to create healthier food. So they want to make jams their own. They want to put less sugar in them. They want to have fresh fruits, as Kate said, local. So it's really a lot of the same reasons that Kate has mentioned.
And Laura, what about you? What do you hear from people?
For me, it's really the family angle. I find that a lot of moms I know, you know, maybe they're trying to grow tomatoes or pick apples with the kids, and then they want to take it the step further where we can our own tomatoes or can applesauce. So, and then just preserve those family recipes, like a wild fermented kosher dill that a lot of Jewish families had growing up. Maybe the recipe's been lost and they're trying to revive that.
You know, it's interesting to me. None of you said frugality. People don't can to save money.
Not necessarily this day and age. I mean, like you're saying, canned vegetables at the stores are pretty inexpensive. So it's for a lot of different reasons. With the local food movement or looking to control what's in their food, because with the fear of the industrial food system that a lot of people have, or whether it's concerned about added sugar or sodium, or just to preserve what they're already growing in their garden. So no, it's not necessarily always cheaper to go through all this.
And your time has a value too. My husband's an economist, so he's always like making me add up the hidden costs.
what do you put for your hourly rate?
You have to get utility, intangible utility from the process. But I think really the rise of the DIY movement, I mean, these make great Christmas and Hanukkah presents. You know, everybody just wants to give somebody something they've made, and jams are the perfect gift.
That's funny, because I was thinking I might like to make a jelly to give as a gift. But then I understand that once you make something, you want to hoard it. Is that true?
Of course.
So I want to back up just a little bit for people who are listening who are maybe intrigued but have never canned or pickled. I know those are two completely different things. Let's start with canning. If you want to do, let's say you want to make something with blueberries, what do you need? How do you start thinking about it? Or maybe I should even take a step back from that and say, if someone's a beginner, what do you recommend? Kate, what do you recommend they start with?
I always think fruit products, but actually, and Allison can speak to that, getting the fruit products like jam and jellies to gel properly can be a little frustrating for a beginner. So I think pickling is one of the easiest entry points. Pickles are a high acid food, so they can be done safely in the boiling water bath canner. So you just need a big pot with a rack in the bottom, your mason canning jars, and then your produce. So you could be pickling green beans this time of year, those dilly beans. There's most anything at the market can be pickled these days. And then you can make your brine out of vinegar, water, salt, sugar. Just follow a canning recipe. Fill your jars and then boil them for the prescribed amount of time.
Allison, what would you add to that?
I would agree that pickling is a great way to start. The other one that I tend to lean towards is jams and jellies, is fruit. I find it very accessible and an easy way for people to begin. So pretty much if you wanted to work with blueberries, you use that example. You know, you've got your blueberries. Sometimes, depending on the fruit you're using, you're going to have some lemon juice and you're going to have your pectin. Essentially, depending on what kind of pectin you're using, it's a pretty simple process of combining the ingredients and bringing it to a boil, and then you put it in your jars, and then you're going to be processing it in a boiling water bath canner in a similar manner to what Kate described for pickling.
When you say a boiling water bath canner, is this something you have to buy, you have to own?
So the nice thing about boiling water bath canners is that you can purchase a boiling water bath canner, but you can also use a pot you have as long as it meets some very specific requirements. You need to have a rack in the bottom. So I often recommend to beginners to purchase one if they think they're interested in doing this, just because it's a little bit easier. That said, you can put your own together, but essentially it's a large pot. In the bottom, there's a rack that elevates the jars. It's got a lid, and you fill it with water, and you have your jars on the rack so that they're not touching each other. They're elevated off the bottom and they're not touching the sides. And then you boil them for the recommended amount of time in the recipe that you're using.
To sterilize them.
Actually, that happens first. You sterilize the jars first in the boiling water, and then you're going to fill your jars and then process them in the boiling water bath canner. And for jams and jellies, it's usually just about 10 minutes.
Okay.
It's basically a lobster pot or just a big stock pot. And if you get a canning pot, you can use it to make chicken stock too. And if you don't have a rack, I just learned from Kathy Savoy of UMaine Extension, you can actually use these circular rims stacked in the bottom to balance the jars on. So you just need to have the glass jars off the bottom so they don't crack.
So if you have, for example, a rack that you cool cookies on and that fits in the bottom of your pot, you could use that.
A steamer rack, if steamer it was rack. The right.
So now I'm thinking, but my lobster pot is aluminum. And I read only this morning doing research for this program that we don't want to use aluminum pots when we're canning. And is that not right?
Well, that's if the food is coming in contact with the item. In the case of the boiling water bath canner, it's just the jars that are in the pot.
I see. You're not making the jelly in the aluminum pot.
Correct.
You're just putting the – gotcha. Yep. Gotcha. We have so many calls and emails coming in. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to get to those. You're listening to Maine Calling on MPBN.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Hospice of Southern Maine, presenting Twilight in the Park, a celebration of life, Deering Oaks, September 27th. Learn more at hospiceofsouthernmaine.org. And Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties, Casella, giving resources new life.
On the next American Radio Works documentary,
basically my jaw dropped and said, oh, this is big, this is different.
American schools are in the midst of a huge change.
The teachers are saying, this is what we came into the profession to do.
But not everybody likes how the Common Core is changing education.
Kids are getting that sense that it's all about this looming test.
Listen for Greater Expectations, the Challenge of the Common Core, from American Public Media.
Join us for that tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock.
The lack of plentiful and clean drinking water has helped fuel violent conflict in many parts of the world, including Somalia.
We woke up without enough water for our children, ourselves and our animals. We save the little water we have for our children.
Global water scarcity and conflict. Next time on America Abroad.
And that's Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today on the program, Food Preservation 101. With me in the studio, Allison Carol Duffy. She's a master food preserver and author of Preserving with Pomona's Pectin. Laura McCandless is a Brunswick-based food writer and radio producer. She's trained as a master food preserver as well. Kate McCarty is the Food Preservation Community Education Assistant with UMaine's Cooperative Extension in Cumberland County. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Is everybody done chewing Laura's pickles?
My pickle, a very ancient recipe. But yeah, that's just kosher dills I made in a big 5-gallon pickle bucket I got from the Big Top Deli in Brunswick. So it already had that pickle smell. And I got 20 pounds of cucumbers and made a brine of pickling salt and water, just a little vinegar to get it going, and just set it in the kitchen, made sure it stayed under 75 degrees so it wouldn't heat up too much. And wild fermentation, lactic acid bacteria, Kate can tell
you
the science.
Right.
Yeah, the salt keeps the bad bacteria at bay, and basically the good bacteria convert the sugars and the pickles into lactic acid like vinegar.
Great. We have Amanda wants to know via our Facebook page, how long will canned food keep? Does it make a difference on the shelf if it's been processed with a pressure canner versus a boiling water bath?
Canned goods, once they're sealed after you've finished canning them, are recommended to keep for up to 1 year. And that's for best quality, not necessarily safety. So as long as the jar is still sealed and the food inside looks like what you started with, then it's still safe to eat after a year. But just try and eat your canned goods within a year for best quality.
When you say after a year for safety, how long will it be safe?
I believe that if it's sealed and again, looks good, so it passes the when in doubt, throw it out test. They're pretty good indefinitely, but you know, if you're digging up something in an archaeological dig that's still sealed, you wouldn't necessarily want to eat
it. Or cleaning out your grandmother's basement.
We'll say 2 to 3 years.
Okay. We're going to go to Cynthia in Aroostook County. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi, Jennifer.
Go ahead.
I I want to discuss the Tatler reusable canning lids. I bought them at the end of the season last year, and just yesterday, for the first time, I tried using them. And it was pretty much a disaster. What I was doing was canning applesauce in my water bath canner, and when the boiling time was finished and I took the lid off, I had a vile, disgusting apple soup in there. Half the jars had, it wasn't just seal failures, the jars were actually turned over on their sides, and the lids and screw bands and rings were floating around. So I actually think I know what I did wrong, but I'm about ready to try it again this afternoon, and I just wanted any input that your guests might have. I think what I did was, I think I screwed the bands on much too loosely. That's what I think I did.
Okay, and I know, Kate, you're going to answer this question, but before you do, tell us what a Tatler reusable canning lid is, as opposed to what we're familiar with.
So the Tatler reusable lids are just that. They're a plastic lid with a separate orange sealing gasket that are very tempting to people because they're reusable. The little metal two-part lid that comes with the case of ball canning jars is only recommended for one-time use. So people are attracted to these reusable lids to reduce the waste and cost associated with a disposable lid. So the two-part metal lid is the only one that's recommended by the USDA for canning, and that's because they're the ones that seal the most reliably and are the easiest to use, as your caller can attest. The Tatler lids are a little bit more finicky to use. And I've never personally canned with them, but Laura does have a jar that has it on it.
So I just had one a friend gave me, and it worked well on some jars with a batch of jam. But I think I do tend to go a little past fingertip tight when screwing on.
I believe
the bands.
And you can find on the internet some advice about how to get them on tightly. But I believe you need to screw it on tightly and then do something like turn it a quarter turn after it comes out. There's an extra sort of finagling that needs to happen.
What about canning with those pretty European Weck jars that you see with that rubber band around them and the little metal clamps on the outside? Have you used those?
Again, no. I stick to the tried and true two-part, but you can use those as long as they seal properly. They're just a little bit more expensive.
Well, Cynthia, good luck to you. I hope you have access to the internet. Are you there?
I'm going to try it again. I think I know what my mistake was.
Okay.
I'm pretty determined to make it work, but I just wanted some feedback. Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. Another question or a comment on the Facebook page. Putting up food from the garden, I have been canning and freezing fruits and veggies since my kids, now both in their 30s, were little. The best tip I was given was to buy the book Putting Food By. It has been my go-to resource for recipes, how-tos, and any questions I had. I would recommend that anyone just starting out preserving food get this book and read it. It will help you save money and keep you safe from improperly preserved food. Is this a book any of you are familiar with, Putting Food By?
Yeah, Putting Food By is like the classic preserver's Bible. The one that my equivalent is So Easy to Preserve from the University of Georgia's Cooperative Extension. And there's a link to that resource on the Maine Calling Facebook page.
Terrific.
And that's used in all the master food preserver trainings here in Maine and in mine in Oregon, too.
Okay, great. We're going to go to Donna in Mercer. Hi, Donna. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. My only comment would be, well, my two favorite things to use for preserving food, other than my freezer, is a steam canner and a food dehydrator. The steam canner is so much easier than having to wait for the water bath canner to, you know, heat up and boil. I don't know if any of your experts have used it, but it's been great for us. I've used it for at least 10 years, and I've recommended it to friends who use it as well. When we first saw it in a catalog, if you're not familiar with it, it looks like an upside-down water bath idea, in that you have a water pan with a bottle rack, and you fill it with about 7 cups of water, 6 to 8, and then it has a dome over it. They call it a steam dome, and it has 2 holes. And I sterilize the jars in it. And as my husband pointed out when I first saw it in a catalog, steam is hotter, is at a higher temperature even than boiling water. And I do everything in it that the Boil Book, which is another you know, resource I'm sure that everybody uses. Everything that they recommend in the water bath canner is done in the steam canner for a lot less energy and time. I don't think I would still be canning if I didn't have
that. Okay, a steam canner. Are any of you three familiar with, or have you used a steam canner?
I've never used a steam canner before. I am familiar with one, and I've never used one because actually it's no longer recommended as a method for preserving. Just the boiling water bath or the pressure canner are the USDA recommended methods.
All right.
I can speak to her question about her comment about the dehydrator, and I totally agree with you, Donna. I am a big fan of dehydrators, and in fact, I have some tomatoes dehydrating at the moment right now, so I think that's a great way to preserve. It also takes up a lot less space.
Oh, and you know, a dehydrator doesn't take – fill your kitchen with steam either, right?
Correct.
Just okay. Wonderful aromas of whatever you're dehydrating.
Oh, boy. Okay, now it's lunchtime. People are hungry. Allison, you also are an advocate of freezing for that same reason. I mean, excuse me, Laura, you're an advocate of freezing for that same reason.
Yeah, just recently, my husband was very against getting a chest freezer, but I think we finally will because I realized your home freezer with your fridge – It's on an automatic defrost cycle, so that's why things get ice crystals and freezer burn, whereas a chest freezer maintains a permanent level of frost as long as it's plugged in. So it really allows things to freeze evenly without freezer burn. So.
Mm, and you have to be organized, though, so things don't get lost in the
chest
freezer.
You have to label everything. Yeah, it's really a problem when you're getting your blueberries for the year and you already have blueberries left over from last season. So I think you need to make sure you purge it in the months before.
Okay. And you know, it's funny you mentioned blueberries. We have a blueberry question from Nancy on our Facebook page. My mom is an expert jelly and jam maker, but she has trouble getting wild Maine blueberries to gel like a cultivated blueberry. She has the same trouble while making a pie. Any suggestions to make wild blueberries work?
Well, I will say it's awesome. I just tried Allison's maple syrup sweetened blueberry jam, and mine did not really gel completely, but I think I just didn't bring it up, maintain the boiling point enough. But even if it doesn't gel, it makes an amazing blueberry syrup that I almost prefer sometimes.
To the caller's point, to Nancy's point, I haven't found a difference particularly between wild or cultivated, so I don't know what her specific problem would be. What Laura mentions about the not gelling, I have occasionally had the same thing happen in making jams and jellies. And in my own experience, when I've had trouble with something gelling, it's because I didn't stir vigorously enough at the pectin dissolving stage. And I can notice a little bit of the sort of grittiness of the pectin afterwards. So that's the biggest thing that I've been able to point to in my own problems that I've had in the kitchen when things don't gel. And I'm wondering whether that might be part of the challenge.
I think I was a little lazy or distracted during the jam making.
Yeah, so. It's easy to do, that's for sure.
Okay, so we have a call from Helen in Norridgewock. Hi, Helen. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
I have a question about canning tomatoes. Often they seem to float after I take them out of the canner, and didn't know what I'm doing wrong, that they're not the same texture all the way through.
So that is perfectly safe. It's just maybe a little less aesthetically pleasing than you would like.
Right.
It happens with peaches, tomatoes, maybe some jams where the pieces of fruit will float up to the top, separate out of the syrup. Mm-hmm. And it's just because those fruits trap air inside of them. So they're on the starchier end, and that will cause it to float. You can reduce the fruit float by using a hot pack where you cook the tomatoes or peaches in your canning liquid, water, or syrup before you fill your jars. But if you're just putting them in raw and then putting the liquid over top of them and they're floating, it's fine as long as the jars seal. It's just maybe a little less attractive than it could be.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter in the basement how attractive it
is. I think I'm going to be doing a lot more freezing tomatoes this year, too, where you slow roast them first for a couple hours on a low heat to really concentrate the flavor, and then put them in freezer bags, either in their juice or with olive oil, and then you can just defrost them and cook them down into an instant sauce and really wonderful tomato flavor.
I don't want to give up the freezer space to tomatoes because they can so nicely, and berries, I don't like canned berries. I put those all in the freezer.
Sounds like a good strategy.
And I a lot of places recommend with berries that you freeze them on a cookie sheet so that they then put them in bags. I have never found it difficult to pour out the number that I want from a bag of frozen berries, and it just seems to me a huge big hassle to put them on a cookie sheet first to freeze them more individually.
Especially the Maine blueberries really just freeze into perfect little balls that don't stick together. But I'd say raspberries, blackberries, some of those mushier fruits need to be separated. Yeah.
Helen, I'm so glad to hear you say that because I have never frozen blueberries for that reason. I never have a cookie sheets space in my freezer.
Just throw them in a bag and put them in the freezer.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you.
What about green peppers? Some people say that they don't blanch them, but putting Fu Gai in the other books say to blanch them for 2 or 3 minutes. What's your feeling about it?
So when you're blanching vegetables to freeze them, you're doing so to kill an enzyme inside that will cause the quality to degrade over time. And peppers, onions, and tomatoes don't need to be blanched before they're frozen. So you can just cut your green peppers or hot peppers, any kind of pepper, into strips or little cubes if you want, or just take the stem and the seeds out and freeze them whole for later use.
There you go. Helen, thanks so much for calling. We are going to an email from Anne. She says, 2 questions. How do you pressure cook green beans so they are not overdone? When do you start timing?
Well, I've already kind of let people know how I feel about canned beans. They are kind of overcooked. So the pressure canner achieves much higher temperatures than boiling water, which is necessary for the safety of canning beans. So you're heating your beans over 240 degrees Fahrenheit for maybe close to an hour. So they do get cooked, but you start the specific processing time when you're pressure canning. When your pressure canner gauge, whether it's a weighted gauge or a dial gauge, achieves the proper pressure. So a dial gauge is just a little number readout. So when the needle gets to the proper number, you start your timer. Or if you're using a weighted gauge, they jiggle at a certain rate that the book that comes with your pressure canner will tell you what that is.
Okay, and the second question is one that one of you knows this woman. What are the ingredients of that amazing spicy peach jam you made last year? Is the question. Actually, more specifically, where did the hotness come from? Pepper, sauce?
No peach jam.
Know?
I've made a peach jalapeno jam.
Is your mom's name Anne?
It's my mom.
Yeah. It's your mom asking about the green beans too.
So the peach jalapeno jam had, and I made it so long ago that I don't actually remember the recipe, but I think I just added a little bit of diced jalapeno to the jam. And I recently found a peach tequila habanero cilantro jam that I'm going to make. There's a lot going on in there, but it sounds amazing.
There's something about fruit and hot peppers. One of my favorite jams is raspberry hot pepper jam from Applewald Farm in Litchfield, and it's made with their own apple cider vinegar. It's amazing with cheese as an appetizer. And they just use hot red pepper flakes, I think.
And I actually have an apricot jalapeno jam recipe in my book.
Oh, good. Nice. Okay, so 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. That's the number. If you would like to join the conversation, we're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Finance Authority of Maine, committed to expanding business and education capabilities by investing in Mainer's success. FameMaine.com.
One day, Sugata Mitra took a computer and he stuck it in a wall in a neighborhood in New Delhi.
Just to see what would happen if I gave a computer to children who never would have one, didn't know what the internet was.
And the results? Well, in 9 months, those kids
would reach the same standard as an office secretary in the West.
Untaught Learning, next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Tune in for the TED Radio Hour this afternoon at 1 o'clock. Join MPBN on Facebook and over 15,000 friends of MPBN for notes about special programming and events, questions for you and from you about our television, radio, and online programming and services, conversations with other listeners who may not always have the same opinion as you. Also, schedule updates, information about news about MPBN. We invite you to become an MPBN Facebook friend and connect with other listeners and viewers. If you like MPBN On Air, like us on Facebook, too.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, how to best preserve your fruits and vegetables. With me in the studio, Laura McCandless. She writes the weekly farm-to-table family column for the Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. Allison Carol Duffy is the author of Preserving with Pomona's Pectin. Kate McCarty is a food preservationist, community education assistant with the UMaine Cooperative Extension in Cumberland County. We invite you to join the conversation. Give us a call. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. An email here from Jeanette. So far this season, I've dried the harvest from a cherry tree in the front yard and tomatoes from the garden as they come in. I'm going to be starting apples on the days when I'm waiting for more tomatoes to ripen. I'm presently drying in the oven, lowest setting, door propped open an inch or so, but will absolutely be buying a dehydrator. Once the stuff is in the oven, that's it. When it's dried, I let it cool, put it in freezer bags. Small bags, the contents reconstitute. Drying is easy, the process does itself, and dried produce doesn't take up much space at all in the freezer. So dehydrated food, you recommend, Allison, putting it in the freezer afterwards?
You know what? I've done it both ways. I don't usually, as long as I'm sure that it's well dried. If I have any question that there's a little bit of moisture in there, I will stick it in the freezer. But I try to get it to the point where it's dried enough that I don't need to, because I don't really like to take up the freezer space.
Usually doesn't last long enough. I mean, if you have kids around, they gobble dried apples or raisins, dried blueberries.
But that is the caller points out a nice point that you don't have to have a dehydrator to be able to dehydrate. You can use your oven. The temperature approximately is about 140 degrees that you would dehydrate at. I do, however, find it, I find dehydrators a little bit easier. I actually just yesterday was doing tomatoes and couldn't fit them all in my dehydrator, so I did some in the oven. And I found that they didn't dry quite as quickly and easily as they do in the dehydrator, because with the dehydrator, you have the air coming up from underneath as well, whereas when they're on a tray in the oven, they're, you know, the air can't completely circulate, but it's still a great option if you don't have a dehydrator.
How much does a dehydrator cost?
Well, I have to say, I have a very old one that was cheap. It was probably $40, but this was 15 years ago. So Kate might have better
ideas.
Yeah,
they're anywhere between $50 and $150, and it's kind of you get what you pay for. And they have a wide selection at Cabela's down in Scarborough, if people are interested.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, going to, is it Andrea or Andrea in Montville?
Oh, hi, it's Andrea.
Go ahead, Andrea.
Great. Nice listening to you women on this beautiful harvest day in Montville. I just made some salted herbs. I went around my garden and picked my parsley and my oregano and my marjoram and my chives that I processed, put them in a food processor, and added a bunch of canning salt. And then they're just going to go in my refrigerator, and I'll add a little bit when I make soups or stews. It's a great way to have kind of a fresh green flavor.
Now, is that the Franco-American des les herbes salées or whatever that you find?
Definitely. Yes, it's a very French, American-French technique.
That's really cool. Yeah, it seems to work really well. I packed basil leaves in kosher salt last year so that mm-hmm. none of them were exposed to the air, and they get kind of brown and gross looking, but they still have that basil flavor, albeit rather salty, but they're nice to add to things.
That sounds like a great technique. I have not tried that. Usually what I do when I do herbs is sometimes I'll put them just straight in the freezer with, like, say, like parsley. Other times I will process them in a food processor and freeze them in ice cube trays, sometimes with a little bit of olive oil. And that is really a handy way to kind of keep them for quite a long time.
Okay, thanks for calling, Andrea. Going to Barney in Reedfield. Hi, Barney. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. I just have a couple of suggestions for folks that they may have that if they have a mistake, like the gelatin question that happened earlier. Knox gelatin, like you get in a store, you have to look at the expiration date, because if it expired, it doesn't seem to gel at all. And then, so that's one thing. And then with the pickling stuff, my grandparents came from Italy, so we I canned. We did a lot of canning as I grew up. In the pickling vinegar, there's different percentages of vinegar. And if I remember right, it's been a while, it's like a 40% vinegar. Now, your ladies probably know more about this, as opposed to like what you would get for putting on your salad or something. And I think that's only about 12 or 20%, something like that. It makes a big difference in making dill pickles. We used to do crock pickles, a big 20-gallon crock, and fill it right up with the salt and pickling solution and stuff. And I can remember running home from school and grabbing one of those great big pickles. It's what you, if you have the cucumbers that get bigger, like maybe 4 inches or 5 inches long like that, then that those crock pickles really are super delicious. And the other, there was one other thing, vinegar. But anyway, that's, we used to put up 100 quarts of tomato sauce. That's what I was going to say.
Yum. I want some. Well, with the vinegar, at least when you're canning pickles, you need to make sure it's 5% acidity. So that's why recipes often call for distilled white vinegar, because it's the standard strength. And lemon juice in recipes is also 5% acidity. Is that correct, Kate? So that's why recipes call for bottled lemon juice to make sure it's standard.
And I've never noticed, when you buy vinegar, does it tell you what the acidity is on the label if I look closely? I've never looked
right
for that
before.
Right
there on the bottom, just like on a beer, it says the percentage alcohol, basically.
Funny you mentioned beer. Thanks so much, Barney, for calling in. Amy from on our Facebook page writes, syrups and shrubs for making cocktails and sodas have been popular lately. I'm wondering how to best keep those so that I can give them as gifts, so that they won't need to be refrigerated before opening. And then after opening, how long are they safe to keep in the fridge?
Yeah, syrups and shrubs. Syrups are then just fruit and like a simple syrup, like sugar and water. So like a flavored simple syrup for cocktails or soda, add some soda water. And then shrubs have a little bit of vinegar added as well, creating a delicious, tangy, sweet beverage. So you can can those in the boiling water bath canner. Anything made out of fruit products has a high enough acidity to be done safely in the boiling water bath canner. And then they don't have to be refrigerated for gifts. But once you give them to the gift recipient, you should let them know they should refrigerate it when they open it. And then try and use it within 2 weeks. I think something with a high sugar content like syrups and shrubs will last a while, but could be vulnerable to mold in the refrigerator.
Shrubs seem to keep longer, though, because they also have a high vinegar content. So it's kind of the eyeball test, you know. I mean, it's safe if it's in the fridge, as long as you don't see any mold. I did a great blueberry shrub because I was overwhelmed by 40 pounds of wild blueberries. So I just threw a lot of them raw in the blender and then added apple cider vinegar and sugar, honey, and it made a really nice concoction with seltzer water.
And then what did you do with your shrub afterwards?
I just kind of poured it, mixed it with seltzer water for a natural soda. You could add alcohol if you want a cocktail, and you could strain it, but I kind of like the lumps of blueberries in it.
Nice. We have a Facebook post from Allie. I am currently peeling tomatoes for canning. Is it possible to get them ready, throw them in the fridge, and then can them the next day? Oh, I think you've stumped our panel here.
I would say it is. Yeah, I would let them come back up to room temperature before you can them. You wouldn't want to put them cold in the jars and then put them in the boiling water. There would be maybe a risk of a temperature shock breaking the jars, but... Yeah, I understand that's a lot of work, and you might want to break.
I have had tomato canning situations where I've done them in steps like that and done the peeling the day before. And so, but yes, I think Kate's point about bringing it up to temperature is a good one.
Okay. Going to Joan in Phippsburg. Hi, Joan. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. How's everybody today?
Well, thank you.
I'm calling about the frozen green bean dilemma. I think I might have the answer for people that do like green beans, except University of New Hampshire developed purple pod beans, and they're specially made for freezing. They have beautiful purple leaves and purple flowers, and you put them in the water to blanch them for freezing, and they turn green. And you know that they are at the right stage, and it's really fun to not tell people about them when you give them away because they call and say, what's wrong with the beans? They turn green.
Oh, so that's your cue that the blanching is done. I never knew that, but it's a shame to lose the purple color.
Oh, I know, but boy, I'll tell you, they taste just like fresh green beans when you take them out of the freezer.
Well, Joan, I've never heard of the great green bean freezer dilemma, but it was fun to bring that up on the show. Thanks so much for calling in. We're going to Friendship and Bill. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Yes. I can 25 to 30 quarts of stewed tomatoes every year, and I grow my own tomatoes. It takes 40 tomato plants to give me my 25 to 30 plus all you can eat during the summer season. And I put my jars in the oven before I fill them so that they are at 212. And then I stew the tomatoes, get them boiling, and put that in the mix. Put the lids on, and they all seal. And I've never had a problem in over 20 years of canning. This is my mother's recipe that I learned out in Wisconsin.
Huh.
And that's my story.
Do you mean to say that you don't use a canner, like a boiling water bath canner or
no,
a pressure canner?
I do not do a boiling water bath. I put the stewed tomatoes directly into the hot jars, put the lids on, and they all seal right up.
There's a name for that method. I think it's called the open kettle method. Well, far be it from me to tell you to relinquish your grandmother's recipe. It sounds delicious, but for anyone.
And they taste so much better than store-bought tomatoes
and for
spaghetti
sure.
and sauces like that. Yes.
Thanks, Bill, for sharing. Going to Marion in Norcross. Hi, Marion.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. Go ahead.
Well, I did hear I've been canning for close to 50 years, but I stick to the Ball Blue Book and my Cooperative Extension Service. Those are my Bibles. But I do have an old copy of Putting Food By. But my question has to do with peeling of tomatoes. The manuals all suggest that you peel them, but I don't. And I just want to make sure that even after all these years, I'm not putting my family in danger by not peeling them. Is it strictly aesthetic? I'm asking the ladies, or you know, the experts.
Yes. There's no safety issue in relation to the peels. It's really just a personal preference. When you're talking about not peeling, how are you processing the tomatoes? Meaning, like, are you making just whole tomatoes that you're canning, or
what I do is I wash them, cut them up, cook them down a little bit, and then can them. You know, using the boiling water method. I don't pressure can tomatoes.
Sure, that's. There's definitely not a safety issue as long as you're following the other recommended guidelines for canning tomatoes. The peels are not a problem. It's really just personal preference in that regard.
You add your lemon juice to make the correct acidity?
Yeah, from time to time I've done that too. But I since I'm using my own tomatoes and you know natural stuff, I have a problem with more recent suggestions about using canned bottled lemon juice. I don't have to do that, do I?
Well, there are newer recommendations about canning tomatoes, and it's true that a long time ago people didn't always do that. But the new recommendations now are that you do add either lemon juice or citric acid to your canned tomatoes for safety purposes. And one of the reasons for that is that there's some variation in the levels of acidity in tomatoes.
Yeah.
That's the primary reason.
Marion, thanks so much for calling. We only have a little bit of time left, but Allison, I want to ask you about your book and preserving with Pomona's pectin. What is the advantage of Pomona's pectin as opposed to other methods?
Well, my biggest reason for enjoying it so much is that you can can using a lot less sugar than you can with other traditional store-bought pectins. So basically, if I'm doing a batch of, four to five half-pint jars of jam, I might only need to use a cup's worth of sugar for that entire quantity. The other advantage is that you can use other types of sweeteners besides sugar. You can use maple syrup and honey, which is just really nice to have that flexibility. The reason for this is that Pomona's is different than other pectins in that it gels in a different manner. It gels with the addition of calcium rather than the addition of sugar, which is what allows you to use other types of sweeteners and less quantities of sugar.
So something great for people who might be diabetic or just watching their sugar for
absolutely,
whatever reason.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, thank you all. What fun it was today. Kate McCarty, Food Preservation Community Education Assistant at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension in Cumberland County. Allison Carol Duffy, Master Food Preserver and author of Preserving with Pomona's Pectin. Her website is www.canningcraft.com. Laura McCandless is a Brunswick-based food writer and radio producer. She writes the weekly farm-to-table family column for the Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. John Keimel ran the board today, and our volunteer Cindy Hahn answered your calls. We had additional help from the MPBN web team. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our podcast by visiting mpbn.net/Maine Calling. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join host Keith Shortall for a discussion about what's being done in Maine to address sexual violence in our schools and in the community. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.